Well, it sure is good to see a lot of familiar faces here. All summer I've been coming to the first service, so I haven't seen a lot of the faces that I see over at the job site in church. And it's really great to see you here. And, you know, I just wanted to thank you for the help that you've extended to me. You know, I've stayed at some homes. I've washed my laundry. I've ate the meals that you've made. You know, we've worked shoulder to shoulder. We've gotten a lot of things accomplished. And there's been times that we just shared personal things from our lives or we prayed together. And it's just been a great summer experience, and it's great to be involved where God's at work. God's doing great things here, and to hear them talk about actually moving this over there this week is pretty amazing, pretty cool, pretty cool. So today I wanted to share some things about a very common event that happened in the Bible. It's the same thing we talked to the kids about. It's when Jesus feeds the 5,000, and then Peter walks on the water. But I want to look at it through a different set of eyes today. I want to look at it like we're one of the disciples. Like, we're actually there, and we're experiencing what the disciples experience. So if you turn with me to John chapter 6, we'll read a few verses, and we'll start to take this apart and see what's happening. So before I read that, I just want to tell you that the background of events here, you know, Jesus has, this is like 2 years into Jesus' ministry, and he's called these disciples. Some of them were fishermen. Their experience with the water. Some of them were married. It doesn't give a lot of details about that, but it says, you know, Jesus healed Peter's mother-in-law, so we know at least Peter was married. We can assume some of the other ones were. They left their homes. They left their families. They left their jobs to follow Jesus, and they weren't really sure who this was. You know, Jesus was this very charismatic person. He's healing people. He's doing miracles. He's casting out demons, and yet they just think he's this amazing man. They haven't really got the picture yet that he's God. So they realize that John the Baptist has just been executed. And they've just come from burying the headless body of John the Baptist. And they're kind of distraught. And they come to Jesus, and they've been busy working, healing, and seeing the miracles that he's doing. And then we come to verse 1 of chapter 6 in John. And it says, after these things, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, or Tiberias, and a large crowd followed him because they saw the signs which he was performing on those who were sick. The disciples had left their homes, left their families. And I want to tell you today, right off the jump in the beginning, that the song says, Jesus paid it all at the cross. And that is absolutely true. There is nothing you need to do to be saved other than say, Lord, forgive me for my sin and have the Spirit come in my life. And I've traveled around the country. I've met a lot of people, and I got a real common experience amongst all of them. A lot of people come to church on Sunday because it's comforting. Or it's like, I see my friends there that I don't see the rest of the week. Or, you know, it's just like the thing I should do, or it makes me feel good. But there's no faith connection. There's no power in their life. There's no forgiveness. God's not using them. They just come to church, but they don't really know Jesus. Salvation is free, but following Christ is going to cost you. And there's a big price sometimes to follow Christ. If you don't know the Lord personally, I would suggest that you see me after today. Ask for my card. It's got my phone number, my email on it. I'll be working over at the site tomorrow. A lot of people are off from school or vacation. Come over and talk to me. Even if you want to talk about what's going on in your life and not salvation. But I'll be glad to talk with you about anything. So we get back to the verse 2 there. It says, a large crowd followed him because they saw the signs he was performing and those were sick. These guys get in the boat. They're rowing across the Sea of Galilee. It's 6 to 8 miles wide, depending where you're going across. And Jesus has attained this like superstar status. I mean, they've seen him doing all these amazing things. He's like a rock star, a celebrity, a superstar. So they're going on the boat in the middle, and they're running on the shore trying to run around to guess where he's going. And when he gets to the other side, they're already there waiting for him. It's like, talk about no relief. So in verse 3 it says, Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the Feast of the Jews, was near. Therefore, Jesus, lifting up his eyes and seeing that a large crowd was coming to him, said to Philip, where are we to buy bread so that these may eat? Now, Philip was the local boy. That's Philip's where he grew up. You know, he knew where the Steve's Market is and Hannaford's and the McDonald's, and he knew where to get what they needed to do. And his response is, verse 7, says, Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for these, for everyone to receive even a little. You know, 200 denarii is like 8 months' wages in that day. You know, are we supposed to spend all this money to feed these people, Lord? What are we supposed to do? But if we go back to verse 6, it says, he's talking about Jesus. This he was saying to test him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. Let me just tell you, God never asks you a question that he doesn't know the answer to. God's not asking you to find out information. God's asking you to see where your heart is, to test your commitment to him, to see how much you believe him or can trust him or have faith in him. God is constantly drawing us to him to have a relationship with him, constantly drawing us into a deeper connection. So Philip's on the side, and then verse 8 says one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there's a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are those for so many people? So Philip steps aside, and then Andrew's there, and he's discovered that there's someone with a little bit of food. Let's go over to Mark chapter 6 and pick up the story there. The Gospels tell the same events a lot of the times. This is one of the events that are in all 4 of the Gospels. You know, Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels. They tell most of the events in the same way from a little bit different perspective. And John's gospel adds a little different features from his perspective because he already sees Jesus as Lord. So in Mark chapter 6, let's start at verse 41. It's the same spot. It says, he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up toward heaven, he blessed the food and broke the loaves and kept giving them to the disciples to set before them. And he divided up the fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. Jesus takes the fish and the bread. And can you just see the disciples? It's like James. He's elbowing Andrew and goes, hey, what's he going to do now? He's going to pray for that? That's not enough. That's not even close. That's not even nearly enough. But he's going to be thankful for what he has. And you just see the disciples there. It's like, what's he going to do now? But he thanks God for what he has. You know, a lot of us are wanting a lot more in life. You know, a lot of us want a bigger house. Well, maybe we should just be glad that the apartment we live in, the roof doesn't leak. You know, a lot of us want a new car. Maybe we should just be glad that the car we have isn't in the shop every 2 months. You know, a lot of people work really hard here. That's a common theme of Maine. There are a lot of hard workers here. Maybe you'd like to go out for a steak on a Friday night. Maybe you should just be glad that the hot dogs aren't spoiled. God will provide for you. God doesn't provide minimally. We're going to see in a second that God can super abundantly supply. But he praises God for the food. He says, thank you for what you've given me. And he's about to do this miracle. So they feed the 5,000. They all eat. They all eat and they're satisfied, verse 42 says. They didn't just all have a crumb. I mean, they were hungry. The disciples had already rowed across the Sea of Galilee, which is a big lake. These people ran across on the land. They've been out in the sun all day. They're hungry. It says they all ate and were full. And then verse 43 says, they picked up 12 full baskets of the broken pieces and also the fish, and there were 5,000 men who ate the loaves. God is extravagant, but he's never wasteful. He superabundantly supplied. He fed all of those people, and there was leftovers. I think it's interesting that there's 12 baskets left over because each of the disciples got a little takeaway basket. And we're going to see that later. I'm going to bring that up again when they get in trouble. But, you know, they got their takeaway basket. It's a lesson. It's for them to remember. You know, it's just like Alexander the Great. He had just conquered this new country, and he's walking through the street with his aides, and there's this beggar. This beggar's got a lot of nerve. He says, you know, Alexander, you know, can you help me? Can you give me something? And in a rare moment of compassion, Alexander the Great comes over, and he comes down to him, and he goes, here, and he gives him 2 gold coins. And he gets back with his entourage and his aides there, and he's walking along, and his aide says, "Hey, why did you give that guy 2 gold coins? 2 copper coins would have been more than enough." He goes, 2 copper coins would have met his need. 2 gold coins show who I am." That's the way God wants to be to us. He wants us to know who he is. God can super abundantly supply. So we get to verse 45, and here's this catchphrase I want you to catch. The first word is immediately. Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side of Bethsaida, while he himself was sending the crowd away. And after bidding them farewell, he left for the mountain to pray. Now what's happening here? Immediately they eat, they pick up the stuff, they're ready to dismiss the crowd, they're all tired, they're all worn out, and he's sending them away in the boat. They didn't want to go. It says he made them go. Aren't you thinking like you're the disciple, and it's like, why aren't you coming with us? Where are you sending us? We're going to go to the other side. How are you going to get there? But the idea is that they followed God's will and got in the boat and left. But Jesus knew that he was sending them into the storm. You can be in the center of God's will, doing exactly what he wants you to do, and there's a storm ahead. And in a crowd decided, there's a lot of people with troubles here. You know, some people, it's just drizzling out. You got a little troubles you can handle. Some people, it's really raining. And some people, it's this hurricane. It's just torrential amounts of rain that you're just drowning and you can't get over it. God will meet you in your storm. God will be there, but he's trying to show you something. It says, in the world, we'll have trouble. You know, and everybody in the world has trouble. We live in a fallen world. Sin has taken over this world. We have disease and issue and crime and all kinds of things, and there really are evil people out there. You know, you may be a little sequestered in the northwestern mountains of Maine. Let me just tell you, there are evil people everywhere, even here. I mean, real evil people. But God, through all these trials, the people of the world have trials because we live in a sinful world, but the trials that the Christian has are for a purpose. They're for you to learn more about God, to deepen your faith, to stretch your belief, or for you to just draw closer to him. God does not send you into trouble without a purpose to draw you closer to him. They're in the center of his will, and there is a storm ahead. Now, I like the analogy that sponges only work best when they're squeezed. You ever try to pick up a spill on the floor? You don't just put the sponge on it. You squeeze it first, and then you put it on it, and it soaks up more of the liquid. A lot of times, God has us in his hand, and he's squeezing us. He's squeezing us so when he lets go, we're going to know more about him. So if we keep reading on down, Jesus is on the mountain praying. In verse 47, it says, "When it was evening, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. Seeing them straining at the oars, the wind was against them, and at the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea, and he intended to pass them by." So now, when it says evening, you know, it's, they fed the 5,000 like 4 to 5 in the afternoon, and then the Jewish evening is as it's getting dark. And then later on, we're going to see that it's the fourth watch of the night, and out in the middle of this lake, which is like 3 to 6 a.m. They've had a long day. They rode over. They watched Jesus with the crowd. They fed the 5,000. Now they're rolling back. They're in the storm. Now, even though a lot of these guys are fishermen, they're weary. They're worn. Now, they may not be so afraid because they're used to the water, but it's dark now. The wind's blowing. I can see some of them bailing out. They're trying to row. It says they're straining against the oars, and they're not making any headway. And can you just see them? They're all there in the boat with their oars, and they got that little basket between their feet with their food left over. But they're not thinking that that food showed that Jesus was really God. They got that takeaway basket with them, and they're sitting there, and they're straining, and it's dark in the middle of the night. He's trying to show them that he's God. He's not just this man. So we follow on down. The last part of verse 48 is very interesting. It says he intended to pass them by. That's an interesting phrase. We don't have a lot of time to develop that today, but there's another spot in the Bible that's similar to that. They're on the Emmaus Road after Christ is resurrected, and they don't realize who Christ is, And finally, it dawns on him that this is Jesus that was crucified. It says he intended to continue on his way. You know, God will a lot of times go on his way without you unless you want to join up with him. God is constantly drawing us to you, and if you ask God to come towards you, he will. It's more that you need to draw close to him than he needs to draw close to you. So it says that he came to him walking on the sea. So verse, go back to 49. It says, well, when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke with them and said to them, take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid. They're bailing out the boat. Their water's crashing over the bow. They're trying to row. And he comes up and he says, take courage. It is I. He didn't stop the storm. The storm's still raging. But he says, take courage, it's I. He wanted to fix their inner spiritual condition before he fixed their situation. God is an all-time comforter. God will never leave you or forsake you. You can get through anything in the power of Christ, empowered by the Holy Spirit. And then verse 51 says, they got in the boat with them, and the wind stopped, and they were astonished. Let's look at the same story over in Matthew 14. There's a couple more details there. It talks about Peter. Matthew 14, and we'll pick it up in verse 28. Well, let's back up to verse 27. It says, immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, take courage, it's I, do not be afraid. The same phrase. He's trying to fix their inner condition. He's standing on the water, and they're in the boat. And verse 28 says, and Peter said to them, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. And Jesus says, come. Interesting. Come. And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. Ah. Everybody gives Peter a hard time because he sinks in the water. But nobody else got out of the boat. Nobody else even asked. It's better to be a wet Peter than a dry Thomas. If you're willing, all it takes is willingness. If you're willing to go with God, he will take you amazing places. He will do amazing things through your life and in your life. So, verse 30 says, but seeing the wind, he became frightened and beginning to sink, and he cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, there's that word again, immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, you have little faith, why did you doubt? Peter had enough faith to get out of the boat, but he didn't have sustaining faith to continue walking on the water with Jesus. It's not a total condemnation that he has no faith. It says, you have little faith, why did you doubt? Now, a lot of us, we don't have little faith, a lot of us have no faith. A lot of us says, why, you have no faith. You know, we all start with a measure of faith, it says in Corinthians. And Christ builds our faith by bringing us through trials, bringing us through different situations, bringing us through storms in our lives or for confrontations with people or in situations where the Spirit leads us. He constantly builds our faith greater and greater and greater until we're ready to do whatever he's called us to do, whatever he's prepared us for. You know, personally, I've had a lot of experiences where God has stretched my faith. And I'll tell you that they're not all that fun while you're in them. But when you're on the other side and you can look back, you can see what God was doing. So he's trying to show them who he is. He comes to them walking on the water, which is their problem. That's their trouble. The waves and the wind are against them. But the waves and the wind are Jesus' footpath to get to them. Jesus can come walking on your problem. Jesus can come walking on whatever it is because he's Lord of all. Lord of all. Mark 6:51 says, they had not gained any insight from the fish and the loaves. They still didn't know that Jesus was the Son of God. And a few chapters over, he asked Peter, "Who do you say I am?" He says, "You are the Son of God." You know, a few years ago, I was really seeking what God would have me do next. And you know, if any of you wanted to do something for me, it would be to pray for me that it would be clear where God was leading me to go next. It was clear for me to come here, start to finish. But I'm not certain what's next. I'm going to go home and work as a carpenter. A lot of people know me. I probably can find some work. But I don't want to just work for money. I want to work for what God has prepared me to do, wherever that is. A few years ago, I was seeking what to do, and I was praying hard about, what would you have me do, Lord? Where would you have me go? Who would you have me talk to? I would pray, and he would bring someone into my life. He would speak to me through his word. Some situation would come up. I would feel led by the Spirit. And weeks went by, and I was praying, Lord, what's next? What do you want me to do? And one morning I woke up, and my first thought in my mind was, you should renew your passport. I'm like, renew my passport? Like, what are you talking about? I mean, I don't have any plans to go anywhere. You know, I'm busy with work. I got these guys. We're doing these things. And, you know, when God puts something on your heart, it won't go away. You know, we have ideas of our own, but when God puts something on your heart, it never leaves. It's like relentless. And it's like, okay, I go get my picture. I go to the post office. I renew it. And the girl at the post office goes, "Whoa, would you like to pay the extra $80 to expedite this?" I'm like, "Well, I don't know. I don't know if I need it or not. But, you know, God's leading me to it, so I'm going to do it." So I paid the money. Like 6 weeks go by, I get it back, and I just file it away. And I'm thinking, well, okay, Lord, I did that. It seems kind of silly, but it's good. And then right about this time, it was Labor Day weekend. It was Tuesday after Labor Day. I get a call from my friend in Springfield, Mass. And he goes, "Hey, Rick, you know, I was thinking of you. Our church is going on a building team mission trip, and it was full, but one of the guys had cancer, and he's had to back out. And there's a spot there, and I thought with your construction background, it would be great if you would come with us." I said, "Well, that kind of sounds interesting, Gary. You know, tell me a little bit about it." He says, "Well, we're building dormitory space for a Bible seminary and some other things for some Sunday school classes at a church, and it would be great for you." I said, "Well, that sounds like fun." He said, "Where is it?" He goes, "Well, it's in Guatemala." And I said, "Guatemala?" I said, "Don't you need a passport to go there?" He goes, "Yeah, do you have one?" I said, "Yeah, I got one." He goes, "Would you pray about it?" "No, I don't need to pray about it. It's already clear that God's paving the way for me to go." So the time quickly comes. If I had waited, I wouldn't have had time to renew my passport, was part of the story. But the time comes. It's time to go. It's flying out of Newark, New Jersey. It's nonstop from Newark to Guatemala City. So I get down to the airport, and I'm supposed to meet these people. But on the way down, I live where there's no cell phone service. But on the way down, all of a sudden, my phone dings. It's like 2 in the morning. I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, I got a message. What's this about? So I hit that. So my friend Gary says, "I had a family emergency. I can't make it. Have a great time. I'll call you when you get back." I'm like looking at my phone. It's like, okay, Lord, let's see what you're going to do with this. I remember, I felt called to go. I thought it was absolutely clear to go. So now I got a little obstacle. Now I'm going with 17 other people that I don't know. So I get to the airport. I get to the gate. I got my ticket. And I find this guy. We're supposed to only bring $100 with us. There's a lot of robbery there. It's a dangerous place. They didn't want us to carry money. He says, "Give your $100 to the guy at the airport, and we'll get there and change it into Guatemala money. And then we'll give it back to you." Okay. So we get on the plane. We're all over the plane. We fly to Guatemala City nonstop. Get off the plane, we're getting our bags, and my bag doesn't come up. So I'm waiting and waiting and waiting, and they get their bags and they go, and there's this girl I'm standing, she's like 25, 28, and she looks Spanish. And I said, you speak English? She says, "Yeah." "You speak Spanish?" Yeah. So I asked these guys what's going on. So she asked the baggage claim, "So there's one more truck coming out. We'll get your bag, it'll be just a minute." Well, 20, 30 minutes go by, 35, oh, there it comes. Bag comes out, she gets her bag, I get mine. There's some other guy there. Go away. We go to customs, and you know it's pretty straightforward. It's not a big airport, and you go out customs, and you go outside the door, and that's like where the taxis and the buses would be. I go outside the door, nobody there. I mean, there's nothing there. There's no bus. There's no taxi. There's nothing. It's just empty. And I'm like, these guys left me at the airport. So here I am in a foreign country. I don't have any money, and I'm stuck at the airport. So I'm thinking, okay, they had told me that the Bible seminary was 2 hours away. So I figured 2 hours there, 2 hours back, an hour to figure it out. So like 5 hours. So this was like noontime. So I'm figuring like 5 o'clock, they'll be back. 3, 4, 6, 7. Like, there's this kid there. And he comes up to me and says, hey, what's going on? I saw I was with a group. I got separated, got lost. So where are you going? He says, oh, I'm going to the Guatemala Bible Seminary for a building mission trip. He goes, well, where is it? I don't know. It's like 2 hours from here. He says, you don't have an address? No. I got a phone number, though. Oh, well, I'll use my phone. He says, I'll call. Phone number's out of service. So I'm like thinking, okay, Lord, let's see what you're going to do with this. Remember, I feel specifically called to go. It couldn't have been any clearer. My friends, you know, backs out. I'm stuck at the airport. No money. No contact. Don't know where I'm going. Kid says to me, you're going to a Bible seminary, right? I go, yeah. He says, you got a Bible with you? I said, yeah, I got my Bible with me. He says, can I buy it from you? And I go, you don't understand. You know, I'm from the United States. I mean, my Bible's in English. You're from here. And you're speaking to me in English, but you're obviously Spanish. He says, no, you don't understand. He says, I grew up in Fort Lauderdale. I read, write, and speak English. But I married a girl from here, so I moved back here, and I speak Spanish. But I can't get an English Bible anywhere, and I can't read in Spanish. Can I buy your Bible from you? A divine intersection. God had a plan. So it wasn't my everyday Bible that I use. I bought like a $20 Bible to bring because I didn't want my normal Bible to get damaged because I really didn't know what I was going to be up against. I said, no, you can't buy my Bible. He says, I'll just give it to you. Because I gave it to him, he helped me, and the rest of that story is I did make it. There's a lot to that story. A lot happened that week. But the point is, God called me there, and it was clear. And then there was trouble in the wings. Now, you know, if you know me at all from the summer, it's like, okay, Lord, why couldn't you just connect me with this kid, and I could have mailed him the Bible? You know, you're going to drag me all the way down here? No, there was a much bigger purpose to what was going on, a much bigger purpose. And that's the key. You know, when we're going through a trial, we can't see what God's doing. We can't see what's happening. We have to be able to trust him that he's in control, that he's calling the shots, that he's going to use you if you're willing to follow him. All the trials we have are for a purpose. You know, in the first service, I couldn't remember this verse because the reference was wrong. It's Romans 8:28. Not all things are good. God uses all things for good to those who love him. Things aren't all good. There is bad. There is difficult things. You may be in a situation that is caused by somebody else controlling you, caused by a situation at work, maybe something at your home. It may be that you were tempted by something and you fell into sin and you're suffering the consequences of sin. It doesn't matter what reason you got there. God will use that trial for good. He will use that to draw you towards him. It will let you learn more about him. God is way bigger than your trials. You know, I said before that he walked on the water, which was he was walking on top of what their problem was. God can walk all over your problem, whatever it is. Your trouble can be his footpath to the answer. When you see God show up, they saw him show up in the dark. They thought it was a ghost. Like, who walks on the water in the middle of the night? You know, he was... When you don't recognize what's happening, it may be Jesus showing up to help you. So, we talked about Mark 6:52. You know, if we back up a little bit, let's back way up. Let's back up to where he said the 5,000, he sends the disciples away. You know, Jesus knew that it wasn't his time. You know, the disciples are excited. You know, Jesus is doing these miracles. He's been teaching people. They're excited. He's been talking about being the king of the Jews. He's been talking about the Messiah that they've been waiting for. They're thinking, this is it. This is the time. This is the time that we're going to get our king. They're going to deliver us from Rome. That wasn't it at all. But Jesus knew that it wasn't his time. God does things in an orderly fashion. And I got to tell you that it is all laid out. And your life is all laid out too. All the things in your life are all done. You just need to live through it, trusting God that he has the answer. You know, at that point when the crowd wanted to make him king and he was trying to send them away and send the disciples away, he knew it wasn't his time because he was smart enough to know, he knew what was going to happen coming ahead, that 1 week They'll praise you and throw you a parade and palm fronds, and then the week after they'll crucify you. It wasn't his time. His time to be sacrificed on the cross was at Passover. He was the Passover lamb. A lot of the Jewish feast days correspond with important events that happen in God's time frame. And there's a lot of talk right now about what's going to happen actually this month. A lot of people have been talking about the rapture and when it comes. And a lot of things that line up in the scripture or the time frame or the Jewish calendar that say that the rapture could be very close. It could be today. Now, we should all live like it's today, but a lot of people are talking about actually the end of this month about the Feast of Trumpets lined up with Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. This is the year of Jubilee. There are some signs in the stars that are talked about in Revelation 12. There are a lot of things that come together. Now, I'm not going to say that I'm going to pick a date and it's coming, but I'm going to live like it's very soon. It could be that today. It could be this month. It could be 20 years from now. But I'll share that with a lot of people, and the common theme is people have regrets how they live their life. If I knew Jesus was coming back, I'd be doing something different right now. So when he comes back and he finds me, I want him to find me doing this. I don't want him to find me what I was doing last week. I want to have a better testimony to my kids. I want to lead a better example to my family. We need to live without regret. We need to live a life focused on what God would call us to do. Focus for God's purpose in our life. Now, trials only end in our life when the lesson is learned. Now, you ever go to school? I mean, there's a little older crowd here, but you know, we're back in school. If you fail the test, you got to take it again. If you fail that test a lot of times or a lot of tests, you get to take the grade again. You don't want to keep finding yourself every 5 or 10 years back in the same situation, back in the same testing ground, the same proving ground, trying to find out who God is and who you could be through him. Now, here's a big one. Let's go back to John 6. In John 6, it says, verse 21, going to find it before me. So John 6:21 says they were willing to receive him into a boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. There's that word again, immediately. Now what does that mean? It's the middle of the night. Peter and Jesus get in the boat. All of a sudden the winds are calm and stopped, and they're at their destination. The fastest way to your destination is to pass the test. God can supernaturally fast forward you. That doesn't happen a lot. There's a few examples in the Bible, only two or three, but you have to really look. But God can fast forward you to your situation. He can change things supernaturally when you decide you're going to follow him. In the early days of aviation, you know, they had propeller planes, and they were just beginning to do transatlantic flights. They were starting to go across the ocean, and the people in Europe started to realize that some of these planes were coming in 45 minutes or an hour early, and they seemed to have less wear and tear on the propellers and on the leading edges of the wing from friction on the air, and it's like they didn't understand how these flights left the same time, they took the same speed, they used less fuel, and they had less wear and tear. Well, they didn't really know about the weather or meteorology, but they realized. They discovered jet streams. There are streams of air that go across the Atlantic, and when they could line up on those jet streams, they would arrive at their destination 45 minutes to an hour earlier. I'd encourage you to find that jet stream in your life. I'm going to call it the Jesus stream. If you can align your life with what Jesus is doing in your life, in your world, what he wants to accomplish through you or in you, you'll get to your destination faster, with less wear and tear. Thanks for listening today. I hope you'll be encouraged to really see what God has for you and that you would live for Jesus.